I'm Faith Middleton. It's great to have you joining the party on the Food Schmooze here on WNPR in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. My food buddies are here. It is the reason I want to get up in the morning. I love hanging out with them. We have Chris Brosberry, senior contributor at Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut. Alex Province, who is our regular contributor, our food and wine and cocktail guy. We have senior producer and producer Lori Mack and Jonathan McNichol, and you can tell your friends no matter where they live, they can listen to the Food Schmooze from anywhere in the world, as many people do, and we are grateful for that. It's great to party with you no matter where you are at WNPR.org. Want to tell you, want to invite you first, because we're going to start with a cocktail. Want to invite you to what is the hottest scene in Connecticut, our Food Schmooze Martini Competition. The tickets are flying out the door. Statewide bartenders, this is how it works. If you've never been to this or heard about this, they shake up these innovative martinis, quote unquote, and you vote for the Food Schmooze Martini Champion. We have Anthony DeSerio, a cocktail guy, who's going to award an additional award for the most beautiful craft cocktail. There is a designated driver discount. We want you to be safe. And we have all these great top chefs who are providing food for the event. So you wander from station to station, food and martini tasting, and the DJ is working it. I'm telling you, everybody dances with everybody. Uh-huh. It is a phenomenal place to meet people. This thing sells out. It is Thursday, June 25th at 6 p.m. start. Simsbury's Riverview, beautiful, beautiful property. Thanks to Power Station Events, they are arranging and designing lighting and DJ stuff right now. And you can order tickets at $60 each to benefit WNPR at ctmartini.org. And we have officially applied to the Guinness Book of World Records for the largest martini competition. Yeah. So we have our fingers crossed on that. We'll see. Okay, here's what we're doing. Later in the show, we have the cookbook called Genius Recipes from Food 52. And these are fantastic recipes, as you are about to hear. They are recipes we can all cook, and they come from significant people. But what's great about this is that they have not made them too complicated, these recipes. So I love that. And we just made some and tasted some. And oh my God, you're going to have the best time. All right, you want to do cocktails as we start every party?
Yes,
please. Okay. So I have two things for you this time. First of all, Anthony DeSerio, who is our regular contributor, he has done what is called the breakfast martini.
Good start.
This, you know, believe it or not, you may think we're being decadent, but no, this is a classic cocktail. And it's an English classic, and it was called that originally, and because it combined a British marmalade with gin. So
ooh.
Gin has all that juniper berry stuff and goes well with citrus in these marmalades. And so Anthony has done a spin on this. And so you call it the brunch martini if it makes you feel better, but we're calling it online where this recipe appears, the breakfast martini. You can use vodka or gin depending on what you like. Anthony happens to like Beefeater gin for this. So it's your favorite gin. The exact recipe is online, foodschmooze.org. Your favorite gin, a little bit of marmalade. You could use orange or strawberry or raspberry preserves, your choice. Some lemon juice, which is freshly squeezed, and a little bit of simple syrup, which is just heated water and sugar, so the sugar melts. That's it.
It
cools off.
Keep it in a squeeze bottle in the fridge.
Squeeze bottle, yeah. Lasts for like 3 weeks, a month. Great for iced tea, iced coffee, or your cocktails.
I love the idea of using jam or marmalade
in a cocktail.
Unbelievable.
Because it has a great component that would.
And some bitter component.
Yeah, some bitter, some sweet, a little sour. I mean, it's a perfect addition to a cocktail.
And have a pantry of it and a refrigerator full of it.
I was going to say, don't we all have like a jar somewhere that we need to use?
I have this Moroccan marmalade, which is a Moroccan lemon preserves with Moroccan lemons that taste a little bit different from ours. And so it has a kind of dark quality that is so gorgeous.
Vodka,
I did.
Huh?
I put it in.
That was last night.
I put it in this martini. It was unbelievable.
This morning.
I eat breakfast right before bed.
It was just 5 minutes ago. Okay, so now we have something else. And this is from Food Network magazine. You know I love that
magazine.
It's so fun. And they have done something we've done on the show, too. But this is a little different spin. They've done these Campari popsicles.
I like this.
This is so cool. You just need those molds
for
making popsicles.
Yeah, popsicle
Although you could do this.
I think they come with them, don't they?
Yeah,
they do. Or you could do this in ice cube trays and put this in a drink where you think Campari would be a beautiful ingredient. Either way, if you want to make these as pops, this is for your adult party, obviously, because Campari... how should we describe this? This is a liqueur.
Yeah.
It's from Italy. It's
Paratif.
Made with lots of herbs and zest
roots and
secret
bitter.
Recipe.
It's orange and bitter
things. Yeah. And
are you? I'm
fantastic.
A fan. I'm a big fan. I always
I
like Campari. If I'm going out for a big meal. I always start the meal with a Campari and soda.
Yeah.
I don't know
where
if I got it from my parents.
I often will do Campari and grapefruit juice in the hot summer.
Right.
Okay, so here's what you do. So first you're going to make your simple syrup, which is boiling water and sugar.
Simple.
And the sugar melts and you let that cool.
That's where it comes from.
Okay. Then you set up a pitcher and you put in your simple syrup, a freshly squeezed orange juice, the Campari, which is that liqueur, Italian liqueur, and the fresh lemon juice. And you put them into the ice pop molds or into your ice cube tray. You add the sticks to it. They usually come with the kit for ice for making. You can get these in the supermarket, by the way. And you freeze them. It takes you about 8 hours. And then you serve them at the party when it's time. And
that's just fun. Everyone who walks through the door into the kitchen gets a pop.
Now,
that's
online,
totally cool.
We have this recipe online.
And a napkin.
And a napkin.
I want to mention that online I am adding to this. I'm putting a spin on this. Or instead of the orange juice, you could add grapefruit juice because that's my favorite with Campari. And it is killer as a popsicle.
What about a raspberry inside or a blueberry?
I love that, Alex. Oh, yeah.
You make the fancy ones.
Well.
All right. We are coming up in our next segment a little bit later on, of course, to our genius recipes and the forever cooked broccoli with shrimp and this chocolate loaf cake from Nigella Lawson. I just adore her. Okay, here's another. You know, we like to cruise our talented colleagues at our food publications. And so Fine Cooking had a tip about how to do, this is a quick way to peel a ton of garlic. You know, let's say you're making chicken with 40 cloves of garlic, or you're doing...
And you really need 40 cloves of garlic.
No, or you're doing
a
party, right?
Yeah, sure.
So that recipe, the 40 cloves of garlic recipe, attributed to James Beard early on, and probably goes back to France before that. And so if you want to do a pork with tons of garlic in it and to do, you know, that
like
pulled pork
or
anything... So they had a great tip, and they said that one of the things they do is to, and I guess they learned this, the author learned this in culinary school. You put the cloves of garlic in a big metal bowl, and then you cover those cloves of garlic with another metal bowl, but this time the bottom side up. So you've made a circle with the two bowls. And then while you're holding the bowls tightly together on the edges, you shake like crazy. So it's a workout
too.
For you. And you keep shaking, and it's kind of fun, as they say, but it also takes almost all the skin off the garlic cloves.
Really?
Can you believe that?
No.
See,
I've got to try this.
Yeah.
You could also use
tried
your clothes dryer at home.
Is that why you have that? You know what? I was like, maybe he ate a pizza on his way in.
Is that what happened? Vampires. He's very afraid. Vampires
like,
away.
You have that. It's your clothes.
Oh my god, that's funny.
Before you go on, though, I have for peeling garlic. they're when you go into those kitchen supply stores, you know, like the Sterlitabs or the whatever they are, and they always have those weird devices like, do I need another bagel slice or whatever? They have one device in there that I buy all the time because I actually love it and it does work.
Is it that round tube?
Yeah, it's like that little piece of hose that they
looks like a cannoli.
Yeah, it looks like a cannoli, and they sell it to you for some ridiculous price, like I don't know, $6 or whatever.
It does work, though.
But you know what? It really does work. And you put the garlic cloves in that, and you just roll it on the counter.
Yeah. It takes everything
right off. Right off it. And I'm like, I'm going to buy another. Every time I go into one of those stores, I'm like, I'm going to buy another one of these.
Well, is that the premise of this?
Do you lose them or you eat
the garlic cloves?
No, because I don't know. I just like come in different colors.
It's just the agitation that takes the skin off on the outside.
Yeah, and that's this bowl, right? The bowl, too, is that knocking against each other.
Exactly. So if you want to spend whatever the amount is for the tube, you can do that.
Or
if you don't,
do the bowl
then
thing.
Do the bowl thing. But by the way, you're probably going to need to – you can – Chris, do you need to take those little ends off, the little dried ends on the gut?
No.
You don't?
No. That's
because I always do. Okay.
Yeah, you don't know. Not for this – I mean, you could – you know, when you get to the chopping part, you can. But to get the skins off in that rolling thing –
No, but I mean in the recipe, whatever my recipe calls for, do I have to take those little dark ends off each clove?
Yeah, I don't.
You don't. Okay. I'm not going to. Why would I?
I don't know. I got to the point where I'm just not being that fussy about stuff anymore.
Do you ever use garlic that's sprouted?
Yeah, I use garlic that sprout. I mean, you know, I have people tell me you can't use that little green part inside. You know what? You picked the dish that had it, in which dish I took the green stuff out.
And win a prize.
Right, and win a prize.
Wait a minute.
I'm gonna make 2 gallons of tomato sauce, and you tell me which one had the little green thing. Oh no, we put them all.
I thought the little green thing just made the garlic less pungent.
Less bitter.
Oh, less bitter. Okay.
Blah, blah,
blah. Blah, blah. I don't salt and drain my eggplant.
Yeah, right. I don't salt and drain my eggplant
because
either.
I think
that
eggplant
was created by the salt companies.
This is eggplant
in the draining industry. Yeah.
Eggplant is.
I don't know what that is.
It's bitter. That's okay with me. It's like broccoli rabe. What am I going to do? Put it in the sun until
when I first started writing recipes and getting paid for it, someone told me to never say this because you have to write a lot. You get paid by the word.
By the word.
So the more you write, the more you get paid. So in saying a recipe, you have to salt it and then let it sit and let it drain. I could make an extra $10.
I know. Except
pay for your new garlic press thing.
You are clearly not in the digital world enough because when you write for online, nobody's paying you by the word. That's for sure. All right. Here's what we have. Tips. We have the recipe book, the genius recipes we're going to be talking about, new cookbooks to tell you about. It's all just ahead. I'm Faith Middleton. I hope you'll make a charitable contribution to Feed the Hungry. More mouthwatering conversation and fun here on the Food Schmooze. We'll be right back.
Cornbread said, now that's all right. Beans. Meet me on the corner tomorrow night.
I'm Faith Middleton. The Food Schmooze Party here on WNPR is heard Wednesdays at 3 and 9, Saturdays at noon. Join the conversation with us on Facebook. Simply search The Faith Middleton Show. And thanks to our talented crew, senior contributor Chris Prosperi of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, our regular contributor Alex Province of Hartford, Eugene Amatruda, Marion Roy, senior producer Lori Mack, and producer Jonathan McNichol. And we thank you first and foremost for listening. And we want to tell you, the folks at Fine Cooking reminded me in their most recent issue of something. I have bought mangoes throughout the year, and I mean in the cold months, and have been tremendously disappointed in them. And, you know, I go home and I cook them and I think, oh, this isn't so great. It did not dawn on me that there is a kind of mango that has, it only comes out in the summertime, and it's called the champagne mango.
Did not know that.
I know. And so that the second I saw this in this most recent issue of Fine Cooking, I thought, that's what's wrong. I'm not understanding, like, just like avocados.
Sure.
And there are varieties. And this is the sweetest that you will find. They're not stringy. They have a kind of creamy texture. They're easy to cut away from the slim pits, as they point out. And it is kind of like a floral, they said, like wildflower honey. And that's true, with a little bit of tartness. They're at their juicy best in the summer. So when you're in the market and you're looking for mangoes, you want champagne mangoes. And just say to yourself, like corn, this is the season. They're yellow on the outside.
Yeah.
You know, the skin is yellow. And I buy those ones in the winter that are dark green with a little reddish tinge.
Little pink.
And
these are champagne. So you must have thought
mangoes.
It was like the time of year then, right? That's what I thought, too. I didn't know there were
different
varieties.
Oh, it's from another country. Yeah, it's all going to be the same. Yeah.
And so it's yellow because I guarantee my grocery store is not going to have a little label that says champagne.
And I want to be there when you ask for it, too.
Yeah, and the kid goes,
I think they are now.
Oh, yeah. Okay. After they get 1,000 questions in the next week.
Yeah. Hey, you know, I can't wait for the summer festivals to start. Can you? There are just a million of them.
Coming.
Lobster and chowder and corn and you name it. So don't forget, in August, the Milford, Connecticut Oyster Festival
is one of my favorites.
Yeah. And they have all kinds of music there, and it's at Fowler Park, and it's just wall-to-wall oysters. There's the one in Norwalk, too, which is gigantic. So we want to remind you about that. And here is something. This is something that I have wanted to go to year after year, and I saw it this time, the ad for it, and I thought, I am really going this year. I don't know if I really meant it.
But you're really going to think about it.
I want to act as if I'm really going.
Pin it on the fridge.
It's the Vermont Cheesemakers Festival.
Oh, fun.
Mm.
And it is Sunday, July 19th. It's at Shelburne Farms, which is so gorgeous in Shelburne, Vermont. 40 award-winning cheesemakers across, and they have local wines and craft beers and cider. They have spirit makers, workshops and demos, 200 cheeses, wine and food products to sample and purchase. And you can see information about this at vtcheesefest.com.
That's
obviously
awesome.
Stands for Vermont.
It's a beautiful place.
Have you done this?
No, I've never been to the cheese festival, but I've been to Shelburne.
I know.
Shelburne.
It's so beautiful.
And to eat cheese out there.
Maybe
and
we
drink
fly
wine.
There. Maybe we fly there. I can fly
you. Oh, that's right.
He
that's
just awesome. Keeps saying he's going to
yeah,
fly
I just, I'm good. No, dude,
and after
you know
eating 200
I'll
cheeses,
you. Yeah,
we'll
I'll
be
meet you. No,
we'll
I'll meet you. I'll meet you there.
The weight requirement coming
I'll
home.
You, I'll meet you there.
Okay. Okay.
It's a short drive on the ground in a car.
Hey, we've got something to tell you about, which is if you're a gluten-free person, and while there are a smaller number of people who are actually celiacs, and for whom it is incredibly dangerous to be around gluten, there are many, many other people who have developed truly, this is not just in people's heads, they have developed gluten sensitivity that can be either mild or high on that, on that spectrum. Very uncomfortable. So when these gluten-free things come out, we like to tell people. So there is a cookbook out called Gluten-Free Classic Snacks. They tell you how to make, you know, you go through the store and you think, oh, I wish I could have that again. Well, they tell you how to make the Nabisco-like honey-made cinnamon graham crackers,
nice.
Or how to make the Quaker-like chewy granola bars, or the Nabisco-like wheat thins even, or
the
Kellogg's-like frosted brown sugar cinnamon Pop-Tarts that are the toaster pastries. They tell you how to make a certain crunch bar that we all used to have by a big company, how to make Twinkies, how to make Ritz crackers.
I want to make a Twinkie.
I wonder how complicated it is.
Pretzel rods.
Just
remember Hostess apple fruit pies?
That's pretty
how
cool.
To make, Is that the coolest?
Yeah, because yeah. I mean, I always say, you know, there's a ton of gluten-free product out there that you can buy pre-made, but it'd be great to have more recipes
like
for people to make at home.
Stuff from the 50s and 60s, right? Yeah. People
and,
grew up with.
You know, I would think not with all the special, very special chemicals. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, that's what I'm saying. And you're in control because you're making it yourself.
Yeah, and it might taste like when we were all kids before yeah. they started using some of these things.
Yep.
Okay, so Modern Jewish Cooking is a new cookbook that's out. And this is interesting to me. This is Leah Koenig, and it's about 175 recipes, handmade seasonal vegetable-forward dishes. Latkes are in here, of course. And so it's a kind of new spin on some of the old-world dishes. And some new things, too. But so if you're doing borscht or a cheesecake, hamantaschen, whatever it is, this is a kind of lightening and health-forward version of these things, so you can kind of modernize these. If you were doing, I'm thinking about lox and dark bread and cream cheese, well, maybe you want to do it with a flavored scallion-flavored yogurt. Or, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? This mm-hmm. is a more modern treatment of that, and I think
yeah,
it's
more
terrific.
Ingredients
everything,
are available now.
And everything keeps evolving, mm-hmm. and you can go back to the classics because you might think nothing is better. Sometimes I think that. When the chicken liver department, I do believe that. Mm. But have a look. Modern Jewish Cooking by Leah Koenig.
Cool.
Hey, let's get into the farm stand thing.
Oh, gosh, it's here.
I know.
It's here.
Time to carry money around in your wallet.
Oh, my
like cash.
Yeah, exactly.
That's
right?
The problem that I have.
Alex and his putting little notes in, you know, those honor system. Oh. Alex is known for, I forgot my wallet, like a note, and then he puts it in the box. I'll be back later with the $10.
Yeah. So I just want to let you know that there are some people doing the little Apple cubes where you can swipe your credit card, but most of these
yeah,
are cash.
Yeah, yeah.
So the farm stands are right, Chris. They're loaded right now.
Asparagus, and I
peas
can't eat
and
more asparagus.
Fiddleheads.
Early lettuce.
Fiddleheads. Those aren't more farm stands. Those you have to actually go out and find. You know, you can get them yourself. Oh, my
can
gosh.
The fiddleheads? How would you do that?
Connecticut River Valley, the Housatonic, along the sides of the Housatonic.
Are you?
They're just...
What about
the
ramps?
Oh,
are there ramps are out?
Oh, my gosh. I'll send you the picture.
They're incredible.
I get ramps once a
I
week
know, you
at
lucky.
The Valley of the Ramps.
I know.
And this is a woman Valley who's a customer of ours, and it is acres.
Sounds so biblical.
I've shown you. I'll put it on
we
the
horror film.
I will leave you a
picture.
We talked
about it last year. Yeah. We actually had it up there last year.
Oh, my gosh.
You
put
can
the
just
picture
see
back
them
on.
Wrapping around
it's,
your neck.
There, it's,
ramps on a plane.
Return of the killer ramps.
Yes, return of the killer ramps. But I'm out there once a week. I go out every Tuesday with my mushroom lady, Marlene. We go out for a walk and we get our own, aww. You know, because
so,
and
now,
just so much to do.
I hate to
love them.
I mean, I since we had that, remember we had the ramp person on and they yes. were telling us where to find them. And it was near the skunk cabbage.
Yep.
So near water and the skunk cabbage.
Yep.
So I'm practically driving off the road as I get near any stream that has skunk cabbage. And my head is, I'm just like looking out the window as fast and I can't spot them.
I can't even tell you. They're in this valley, and this is a valley.
But where can – how do we do it? You know, we don't have
yeah, we
the
weren't
valley.
Invited
we're
to
not
your
invited
valley
to France. Your valley.
Exactly like that woman told you because as you were saying that, I'm thinking in my head because I'm not good at finding these things either. But as I walk into this valley, there's a stream that runs through it, and you see these large – green things, these
but
huge
it's
green.
Not
that's
the skunk,
the skunk cabbage.
Yeah.
No, that's right. You see those, and that's the first sign in your head. And I'm like, there's because really, when they first come up, which is a few weeks ago now, it's the only green in the woods.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's it's now it's getting a little harder as things start coming up to discern where they are. But in the beginning, it's easy to see it because there's nothing else out there.
Yeah.
So you look for a stream or wetlands, and then you look for the skunk cabbage, those big green things, and then you can go online and look to see what the actual leaf of the ramp
yes,
looks
be
like.
Be sure to check because it's not, you know, this is no fooling around.
And then we dig with a little knife. You dig down and you just cut the root and you pull it out. And we don't take it all, right? They grow in little clumps of three or four. And we try to take one or two out of each clump so next year it'll come back and it'll be there for
because
us again.
Because God knows she wants that valley to be 5 acres. And
I just – I thought actually we were out there last week, and I actually thought if we were to harvest this whole valley, it would take us days.
Wow.
How do you cook them? What do you do with them?
Oh, we grill. Yeah, right
I
now
grill
we're grilling
them in olive oil.
And for the weekend, we're doing foie gras with pickled ramps. Because we have so much now. We have so much ramps. Oh. We have to pickle them. We have to grill them. We have
it's
to
because you pick
them.
Too many.
Well, I'm not taking them all.
Think
I'm, we're doing
it. Here's too many.
There's no such. Listen, no, after last winter and no green and just the snow.
But you can take ramps and slice them as if they're scallions.
Yes.
Thin sliced and throw them. I'll throw them in tuna fish.
Salads,
I'll throw them in salads.
It's an onion.
You can do anything.
It's
yes,
a wild
it's
leek.
Exactly.
It's in that family. So
delicious.
You can anything you would put an onion or a leek into, you could use these.
So come back to the farmer's markets.
All right, back to the farmer's market. We're in the woods.
They're
oh, my gosh.
In the, they're
literally
open.
Out of the valley.
They're in the woods.
Lettuce. The lettuce. Oh, my God. This year,
the lettuce is beautiful.
So amazing. And right. I think we had that hot. Yeah.
Crisp.
And we had that pop of hot weather, and that really shot the stuff out of the ground.
And yet it's crisp and
because
not
now
overheated.
It got a little cooler, and oh, my gosh.
Standing
so
moist,
good.
Standing up at attention, very firm, beautiful.
Yeah. I wonder
arugula.
If we're healthier now this time of year, eating all
oh,
the
yeah,
lettuce.
And... Definitely. There's no question. I crave green vegetables in the winter. Towards the end of the winter.
To fight off your scurvy.
You know what? Why do we love asparagus and these things in the spring? It's because in the winter, we haven't had enough.
That's exactly why.
Right. And that.
Poor Chris and his peg leg.
No, wait. Before we move on, listen. If you haven't had asparagus this year, you have to have it from a farm because I know we can get asparagus all year round now. It is not the same.
So how do you cook it?
True.
We grill it, and it's just – it's so good.
I'm still roasting. My grill's not out.
So you're roasting.
Quite yet. But I'm in the process of moving, so it's not – everything's not set up. But I just – sheet pan, piece of aluminum foil. Why clean the pan? Drizzle olive oil in abundance on the aluminum foil and then throw down the asparagus. I've snapped off the tough ends. I don't peel it or anything. And then I just, roll it in the olive oil. And then I sprinkle on lot of sea salt. And into a 350 oven it goes. Yep. And in about 20 minutes,
an hour,
it's a little charred. It is beautiful. And people can't get enough of it. Honestly, really, like that, it is gorgeous.
We did that, the same thing. We roasted a bunch in the oven. And then we took prosciutto. We bought the stuff that's already sliced in the supermarket, and we rolled it around the roasted asparagus.
In the oven?
No,
after
it. After it came out, it was still a little warm.
Hey,
so
what if we
totally
chopped
hot.
Up some, got a chunk of prosciutto and cubed it and threw it on the pan?
Or pancetta, that Italian
Or pancetta,
bacon.
Oh, yeah, the Italian bacon. Oh, my God, wouldn't that be fantastic?
So much you can do with it.
Yeah, and you can throw nuts on the pan. Yeah. You can, at the last 5 minutes... Grate a little Parmigiano Reggiano on top of it.
And let it get crispy on top, too, right? Put it back in the oven.
Yeah. Oh,
so
fantastic.
Our dinners now are mostly grilling out on the Weber, so I get a protein, and then I'm trying, instead of doing a lot of starch, doing a lot of vegetables. So how do we, what are some stuff? So I've been doing red peppers cut in half, olive oil, salt, grilling those, zucchini.
And do you put a little balsamic vinegar on that, too?
No, I should.
Yeah, that's what
it
I do.
It adds a little... Extra
you pour
something.
It on the pepper?
You just sort of drizzle it on.
A little snap.
Right. Flares up.
But it adds that little
And there's
part.
A trick that comes
it's
with
It's drama. But I'm finding that after, eating the protein and all the vegetables, I'm satiated afterwards. I feel good and, I skip the big baked potato.
It's an hour later that is the problem.
That is
right?
The problem.
Because
you're hungry again?
No.
That's when you eat the
little,
ice cream.
That's when I start saying, let's get ice cream. Or let's have potato chips, whatever it might be. I'm a little bit hungry.
I ain't so healthy. I got to change that.
So do check out your farmer's market. They're obviously in the cities.
More.
And there are, thanks to the work of so many people, including Michelle Nishan at Wholesome Wave and so many other people at nonprofits, there are the systems now where people who are on SNAP programs can get double the vegetables for their SNAP amounts, and that is helping everyone to have vegetables in their diets, and it is an absolutely fantastic thing. I am so proud of the state of Connecticut for encouraging something like this, and it's phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. Here's what's coming up. We have the cookbook, Genius Recipes, and it's from the site Food 52, and these are phenomenal. Forever cooked broccoli, you will see it is one of the best things you have ever eaten, with chili peppers and everything else, garlic. It's unbelievably delicious. We just had it here on the show, and we put some shrimp on top, and it was stunning. So that's coming right up. Please support your local food growers and food makers. You can find the food, wine, recipes, everything we talked about right now or anytime online at foodschmooze.org. More delicious conversation after a quick break. Please stay with us. My favorite songs on this show. I'm Faith Middleton with the gang. This is the Food Schmooze Party, coming to you in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. You can tweet us at FaithWNPR. And to join the conversation with us on Facebook, search The Faith Middleton Show. We've all been ready for this. There is, this book is called Genius Recipes, and it is created by Food 52. Food 52 is one of my favorite websites for food. And by the way, our guest, Kristen McGlory, is executive editor of this site. And they have all put together this cookbook because it dawned on them, this is so smart, that if you took the best of the best recipes from the best people, curated as we do here on the Food Schmooze, and then put it between two covers, you would have something that nobody has exactly.
Which is genius.
It really is genius. Exactly, yeah. Lori. So, by the way, the book has a foreword by Amanda Hesser and Meryl Stubbs, who do Food 52 online. Amanda Hesser has been on the show many times, and she was at the New York Times and then started this food website, and this is what she does, in addition to many, many other things in the food world. So, along with Kristen McGlory, who's executive editor. Kristen, welcome to the Food Schmooze Party.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's such a pleasure. I want to start with something which is a little unusual, and it's a recipe that is about biscuits, and that's in your cookbook. And I weirdly want to turn to the sidebar on the recipe, which is one ingredient, corn butter. Now, can you imagine having biscuits or flatbread or anything? I was thinking
pancakes.
Sliced tomatoes, right? Pancakes, a million things, corn butter. Can you just picture what this could be great on? So tell me about this.
So the title really says it all. It's one ingredient. It's fresh corn. And the thing about corn that we don't really think about is that it's full of this starch. You know, it's very sweet. It tastes fresh and just like summer. But it's full of this starch kind of trapped in the corn milk, as people call it, that when you heat it, it thickens. And it will turn into a butter-like substance when you heat it and stir it. And it tastes really incredible just all by itself. You can season it a little bit with salt or with a little bit of extra butter if you want, but it's perfect just on its own.
Oh, my God. So you cut the kernels from ears of corn, and then you're scraping the juice from the cob with the back of your knife.
Yes, and that's something that people forget to do. They forget to sort of harvest that extra milk that's trapped in the cob. You know, because it's not in those kernels that you've cut off and put into a salad, maybe, or into a chowder or something.
So you've
but you can get all that good stuff out.
You've got a juice now, and you put it in the blender.
Yes. So you have your kernels, and you have the pulp that you've scraped out, and you can either put it through a juicer if you have one, or you can just blend it on high for a couple minutes just to extract as much as possible, and then strain it.
Yeah, And then this is the secret thing, right? You heat that strained juice.
Yeah, you heat the strained juice, and at first it'll look kind of milky and just thin, and then as you heat it, the magic happens where the starches kind of thicken up, and it becomes butter.
Wow. And then you whisk it, cook for another 30 seconds, take it off the heat, taste it, and you will get this sweet and smooth and earthy and buttery thing. And you add a little salt and butter to this, right?
If you want.
Yes, we want.
Which, yeah, I mean, who wouldn't? But, you know, if you're vegan and you don't want to add mm-hmm. butter, then you the corn made the butter for you.
On an English muffin for
oh.
breakfast.
Oh, yeah. Honestly, what I want is either English muffin, piece of toast, a strip or two of bacon, and on the toast, this corn butter, maybe a slice of tomato, and I've got bacon. Oh,
like
honestly.
A BLT. Yeah. That is
oh, that no. With corn butter, a BLT oh. corn butter. Yeah. Oh, my God. Incredible.
You know,
eggs.
Also, yeah. on blueberry pancakes, it would be really good. Blueberry and corn are really good friends because nice. They both happen in late summer usually.
So now I want to tell you about something. This is going to sound unusual, and I want to say to you, Kristen, that when I was in France, I was leading a food and wine tour for our listeners. I went to Jean-Michel Guillemette, who is at Union League Cafe. He's one of my teachers. And I said to him, what do you think I should request from these Relais and Chateau properties that we were going to? And he said, what their grandmothers made. And one of the things were eggs that were poached in Burgundy wine.
Oh,
and
wow.
It was so incredible. Mm. Lori, you had this. We had this together. It was so
it was
incredible.
Amazing.
So when I came to
were
your
red?
Recipe, yes, they were yeah. stained red. So when I came to your recipe of fried eggs with wine vinegar, I got this immediately. So tell us about this.
This one is also from a French chef. It's from Roger Berger. And it's just basically you make fried eggs and then you swirl a little bit of wine vinegar in the pan that's still buttery. After you cook the eggs and then pour that over the eggs. And it sounds a bit strange to be eating vinegar early in the morning, but if you think about it, it's just like if you put hot sauce on your eggs, it's very vinegary and sharp. And I think that egg yolk really needs that to cut through all yeah. that richness.
Yeah, especially if we love duck eggs on the show,
yeah,
especially with my duck
thing.
Eggs.
I'm thinking like huevos rancheros, but
yeah,
French.
So we're talking with Kristen McGlory, who's executive editor of Food 52, the website, and Genius Recipes is their new book. These are 100 recipes that are from notables in the food world. And what, Kristen, I have to say to you that I appreciate about this is that we talk to chefs all the time, and we're very careful on this show about not giving people things that are crazy. I mean, once a chef came on and said, prepare a rabbit stock, and we all burst out laughing.
That was step one.
So I like that these are all doable recipes and very delicious. So let's do another breakfast thing. Olive oil and maple granola. I was wild over this
Love
recipe.
Go.
Yes, that one, it comes from Nikizia Davis, who started the granola company Early Bird Foods. And the key ingredients are in the name, olive oil and maple. It actually also has salt and brown sugar and then really whatever you would like to put in your granola. This one calls for oats and various nuts like pecans and seeds like pumpkin seeds. And really you just coat the granola, like the granola elements in this stuff and stir and bake it at a low temperature. And you make your own granola just like that. It's really just stirring and baking. That's what people don't realize. And this granola in particular is so good because it gets very crispy. It has this really wonderful salty sweet kind of crust on all of the ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, compared to everyone's had granola from the grocery store that they buy in a box, and it's just kind of like almost clammy. It's just not crisp. It's just kind of like these sad clusters that just aren't very fun to eat. And this is like nothing but fun to eat, really.
And you can customize this, as you said, to... Yes. The way you like it. If you want it extra crispy, you can do it. If you want it saltier, you can do it. If you want it sweeter, you can do it. If you want less sweet, you can do it. I love this. Olive oil and maple granola. So let's get into something more savory. Pasta with yogurt and caramelized onions. Mm. I love this.
It's so funny. You know, we think about Alfredo sauces and all these rich, heavy cream sauces for pasta, but it's not that common to think about just putting yogurt on pasta, even though people love their yogurt at breakfast or maybe a spoonful of it in a soup or on top of a pita or something like that. But it's actually a very good pasta sauce if it's just loosened with a little bit of salty pasta water. And then if you have some accents, in this case, Diane Kouchilas, the Greek cookbook author, uses caramelized onions and like a salty aged pecorino cheese. And that kind of balances out the very tangy, bright yogurt sauce.
So she originally calls for a cheese, which is kefalotiri, and
yes,
that is amazingly, I buy it at Stop and Shop, and it's probably in a lot of other supermarkets too. So if you want to go the whole distance and do what Diane does, then you have the real Greek thing. But pecorino will be beautiful. It's close
by. Just a salty cheese?
Yes, yeah. Salty cheese.
Yes. And, you know, what's interesting, too, about this recipe is it was really special when it first was published. But this was before Greek yogurt was very popular. So in order to make the recipe, you had to strain the yogurt yourself for a couple hours, which is really not a big deal. But now that we have Greek yogurt that's already strained and already thick enough to cling to pasta, it's that much easier, and it's almost like a ready-to-eat convenience food.
Yeah, and now those Greek yogurts are in every supermarket, or you can go to your farms. Various farms are making their own yogurt now, which is really fantastic. Okay, here, let's go to what we just made on the show, thanks to Chris Raspberry. And it is a way that I personally love to have broccoli, which is not undercooked, but overcooked.
Me too.
It's, you know, and there's a really fascinating thing Chris said about the overcooking point, but this is broccoli. This recipe is called Broccoli Cooked Forever, and it is from Roy Finnemore. So, Chris, tell us how this came together, and how simple and
first,
so crazy delicious.
And why did we pick it? I mean, who would pick a recipe called Broccoli Cooked Forever?
Honestly.
We did.
We like the picture, I think, right?
No. I love the idea of Broccoli Cooked Forever.
I saw
it, little chili peppers and some anchovies and blah, blah, blah. I was like, I'm all about this. Go ahead.
So, yeah, it's really just cooked broccoli, and you do cook it forever. You start by blanching it. So you take boiling salted water, and you put it in there for a couple minutes. You sort of get it ready for the pan. So you blanch that for about 5 minutes, and then you strain it out. And then you take a cup of olive oil, which seems like a lot, but it's needed to do what you need to do to this broccoli. So you start with a cup of olive oil in a pan. You throw in some garlic, get it sizzling. Then you throw in two small hot chilies that are sliced lengthwise. Or I just use some chili flakes too because I really wanted to control the heat. I'm worried about my the chilies that I have getting too hot. And then you mince up 4 anchovies and you sort of melt that in the oil with the garlic and the pepper. And then you throw in your blanched broccoli and
it's
a little
chopped up a little.
You blanch it in florets. So, yeah, it's in the florets. And you can even peel the stems and chop those too, it says. And then a little salt and pepper. And then you literally cook this.
You put the lid on,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. And you literally cook this for 2 hours.
I didn't taste any anchovies. Wow.
It's sort of melt. The anchovies, after 2 hours,
this is
they're
where,
gone.
For people who think I don't like anchovies immediately,
you don't even taste it.
There's a way to make, when anchovies melt, there's a way, especially cooked like this, where they're a back note. Mm. And it has nothing to do with anchovy, that strong, strong anchovy flavor.
But I like what she wrote. And she wrote, broccoli overcooked carelessly tastes stale and murky. But when pushed beyond that, right, you end up with miraculous substance.
Boy,
and that is it, right?
It was.
And she's
incredible.
Right, because when it's just overcooked, it's sort of mushy.
We
and
were scraping
watery.
The bottom of the pan to get it.
Oh, my gosh.
So, Christian.
I drizzled that oil over the shrimp, too. We ate it with shrimp. And then I took that broccoli, garlic, anchovy oil and drizzled that on top.
So we're getting all the vitamins, too, because the fat soluble vitamins are in the olive oil.
See, there's our technical guy.
So Christian, as you can tell, we put a protein on top for our brunch as we usually do. So we put shrimp on this because we know shrimp and broccoli, wonderful pairing. I want to ask you a quick question before we get into how fabulous this recipe is. I would say make this one of the first things that you cook in this cookbook. It's called Genius Recipes Food 52. And that recipe is on our website right now with information about this cookbook at foodschmooze.org. When you're cooking it in that amount of oil, people will imagine that all that oil, as if it's, I don't know, eggplant, is getting sucked up into the broccoli. Oh, no, I can't go near that. But that's not what happens, right?
I mean, to be honest, I don't know. So much of the olive oil gets left behind in the pan, and olive oil is so good for us. It's, you know, it's part of the Mediterranean diet. I think it would be a shame, a crime almost, to not take advantage of all of that oil and, you know, drizzle it over
sandwiches,
bread, to like, you know, to use it for other in dressings.
That oil tastes so good.
It does.
It's amazing because it has the anchovy and the broccoli and the garlic and the chili.
Put it
it's
in a like squeeze bottle.
Oh, my gosh. You could just drink it.
Don't get carried away.
Well, so it was really fabulous. And in fact, I just want to point out that your pan is not empty of oil when you're done. It looks like the same amount of oil, a little bit of oil is going to be in your
broccoli.
And
I should have said you pull this out in the recipe with a slotted spoon. Right?
Yeah,
so you do leave that oil behind.
Is the oil green? Or?
Yeah, oh my gosh, you have to look at the oil. It
you could put
looks
it if
like,
you're really, if you are, you know, there are people with issues, and so if you have got to be careful about calorie intake, of course there are calories in olive oil. If you want to put this on a paper towel or drain it, feel free. Whatever you need to do, this is fabulous flavor. Okay, let's try garlic green beans. Love them. This is Penelope Casas, huh?
Yes, who is she's passed away recently, but she was a Spanish cooking expert. And this is a Spanish technique where, you know, it seems like not a way that you would get good green beans at all. You would think that the way that she does it, which is basically just throwing them raw into a fairly high heat pan, you would think that you would burn them before they would cook through, but that's exactly what she does. And she cooks them in butter, too. It's not, you know, you think, oh, butter will start to smoke if you don't cook it, you know, fairly low. But she throws in her butter, she throws in her green beans and lets them kind of singe in the butter, and then she covers it just to help them cook through. And then only at the very end does she add in a little bit of crushed garlic and salt. So the seasoning stays kind of like sharpened on the outside, and the inside of the green beans just taste very much like green beans. They're you know, if you blanch them, they would maybe wash away some of the flavor. This is just like strictly green beans cooked down in their own juices, basically.
Fantastic. And they've got that brown caramelization the way that green beans in a Chinese restaurant do, so it's great. Dense chocolate loaf cake. Oh, Nigella Lawson, one of my favorite people. Go ahead, quickly tell me.
Yes, dense chocolate loaf cake. It's fairly unconventional. You cream butter and sugar, and then you start adding in all this boiling water. And so the batter becomes very runny, and you don't think it could become a cake. But it becomes this very dense, very squidgy, as she would say, moist chocolate loaf cake. And it's just really excellent, and it gets better and better the longer
and it's sort of damp and pudding-like inside. You know, oh, my God.
We don't have that to try.
Yes, and then it gets great crust. Too from the dark brown sugar.
I know. Oh, it's the best. Absolutely the best. I just adore her. I'm so glad you included that. Very fast, the brown butter tart crust. We are nuts about brown butter on the show. And so we make up ways to use it that maybe people haven't even thought of.
Yeah,
Chris says we want to do it in milkshake.
Haven't done a cocktail.
There's a brown butter tart crust in here that it's just, no matter what you put on top, It's like a good shortbread with that browning kind of thing. So really fantastic. Thank you so much, Kristen McGlory, for being on the show and for being part of this in really amazing work. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been a real treat.
Okay, we'll see you soon, I hope. We'd like to have you back on.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you.
Okay, it's called Food 52, Genius Recipes, 100 recipes that will change the way you cook. And I actually think it will, because these aren't hard. And it gets you thinking, and it's about strong flavors, which we like on the show. Thank you, my buddies. The Food Schmooze on WNPR airs Wednesdays at 3 and 9, Saturdays at noon. We are online anytime. Find the recipes, food products, restaurants, value wines, easy cocktails that we feature at foodschmooze.org. Here's to pleasure, my friends. And remember, never eat more than you can lift. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.
Come to my house.